The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just wrapped up what ended up being a quick two-game set. Unfortunately, game three was rained out against the Toronto Blue Jays. They split those two games one apiece. The Red Sox now stand at 43-37 on the season, and they occupy third place in the American League East. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm pretty good, man. Little disappointed that we didn't get this game in, considering I was interested to see how we would bounce back from Tuesday's debacle. With Thursday's off day, we don't get to see him respond to that game until Friday. So we'll talk about what that means, I'm sure, including rest for the bullpen. And pushing starters back a day, but excited to talk Sox baseball.
And where can people find you on Twitter, real quick?
At JTShill20.
Sounds good. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Not too bad. Also kind of bummed we didn't get a definitive third game in there, but... Who knows? It's rescheduled for August 25th, and I'm fairly certain the Blue Jays are going to blow it up to an extent, so they'll have a much different roster. Ours is open to interpretation, which we'll be getting into with this show and perhaps the Clown Takes episode. But I'm good. I can be found at Cushman MLB, the podcast account, at Bastards_Boston. Find us on Instagram and check out our Substack blog if you haven't already. It's kind of a bit of a twist compared to how other people do it. You'll see what I mean when you get there. We've been inactive this week. We'll probably pick it back up late next week and then continue on for the rest of the season. We're still in our kind of in the later stages of getting a new co-host for this show. It'll actually be the midweek show that person comes on. Jeremy will slide over into Cody's slot on the early week, but basically finalizing the interview rounds, which are set to take place on Monday and Tuesday. So more details as those come out. We may do a show with the new co-host, like an introductory press conference, if there's some availability for that, but we'll lock that down next week.
Sounds good. Yeah. A lot of exciting things heading towards this show. So definitely looking forward to that. And we have, even though it was a shortened series, even though we only got two games out of it, there's still plenty to talk about with those two games. A lot happened. One was an amazing comeback win. The other was a really just embarrassing blowout. So it was really a Jekyll and Hyde kind of series for the Red Sox, and certainly a lot to get into with those two games. So I guess, you know, Jeremy, I'll start with you. I mean, like you said, it's disappointing we never got that sort of rubber match game that we were hoping for tonight. You know, August 25th, as Terry mentioned, by the time we play that game again, both these rosters are going to look very different. But two games, two very different outcomes. Does it change how you feel about the trajectory of the team at all, or just is it all kind of the same?
So on the 0 to 10 scale, I'm going from a 6.2 to a 6.3. The style of the win on Monday excites me. They hadn't done that yet this year. The fact that they are now potentially capable of doing something like that excites me. the fact that they still hold a playoff spot, at least going into Wednesday night's rainout, excites me. Breslow's comments make me want to punch a wall. And Cora's pregame conference today around 4 or 5 o'clock, which seemed to be a complete shot at Breslow's comments, excite me. And by the way, the dichotomy with Cora not having a contract allows him to basically do and say whatever he wants. It's extremely refreshing. And I love that they're fighting it out in the media. And Cora is the one that's right, by the way. So I upticked slightly to 6.3 because of the win, because they're holding a playoff spot. But I'm very pessimistic about the message coming from management and the front office.
Terry, how are you feeling?
I'm actually not up to speed on Cora's comments, so I'll check that out shortly. But the Red Sox are very fortunate to come out of this with a split so far. You know, they fell apart late after Houck came out. We're not going to get into Isaiah Campbell in this episode, but dude got torched. Vladimir Jr. hit, I think that was a home run, wasn't it? Or was that the double? I get them mixed up. But he put a couple of runs up either way. And this team has the clutch gene. Like, you've got four players on there. Duran, Hamilton, Abreu, Ref Snyder, and even as of late, Gonzalez, all step up in big moments, and we're seeing
and it. Devers.
Devers goes without saying. I mean, that's just who he is. But guys that you don't necessarily expect to step up are stepping up. Connor Wong would be another good example of that. So I've just never seen a collection of that many players that can do that can overcome some bad pitching. And I don't know how sustainable that is in the long term, but it's what's gotten us here to six above. Having said that, you know, I'm concerned about the pitching, and we're going to get into plenty of that.
Yeah, I think it really was just such a, you know, 180 from Monday being, I think, the best win, not just of this season, but of the last couple of seasons that we've seen, particularly at Fenway Park, you know, with the Celtics there and everything else. And then you go into Tuesday and, you know, Bayo gets his lips ripped off. You know, it's just that the offense does what it can, but it's just it's too little too late. I agree with Jeremy. Breslow's comments really pissed me off. It just feels like it's going to be more of the same. They're not going to do anything at the deadline, and I'm glad that Cora is responding a little bit, because he should be pumping his chest out a little bit. He managed his ass off Monday night in that win. I mean, he was pushing all the right buttons. I think he completely outmanaged the Blue Jays manager, whose name I always forget.
Schneider. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think he completely outmanaged him. He baited him into doing exactly what Cora wanted him to do. Cora got the matchups he wanted. And, you know, he was able to manufacture a win. So for a guy who has 1 foot out the door, and I think we all agree on this show, he's gone after this season. He is certainly making a case for being the highest paid manager in baseball wherever he lands up next season, because he is managing really well right now with a not very good roster and a somewhat depleted one with all the injuries. And the fact that him and Breslow are already kind of going back and forth, it's just more of a sign that the deadline is going to basically facilitate Cora's exit from this team, because I think we all know what's going to happen there. So
wait, catch me up, because maybe the audience hasn't, you know, seen it either. Like, what happened? What got said today?
So, Jeremy, you saw more of that than I did. I only saw little snippets of him basically saying, you know, we're going to continue to play and play hard. And that's, you know, we don't care what, you know, anyone else is saying about what's coming up at the deadline, stuff like that. But I only saw those little snippets. So
in the Monday broadcast, I believe it was the Monday broadcast, they put the team, the TV team, up in the Green Monster, and they had Breslow come and sit with them. And John Henry's hand was where it shouldn't be and puppeting Breslow. And it was just such propaganda from ownership. Breslow can't possibly feel that they should still sell. And the message, which he wasn't being like direct with, but the message was, well, I know where we are, but it's a small sample size. So sure, we've played great the last 2 weeks, but the large sample size is we're a 500 ball club. And when you apply that to our probability of making the playoffs, we're going to get the same comments we got last year at the trade deadline, which is our probability to make the playoffs is 26.2%. And you don't buy at a team that only has 1/4 the chance to make the playoffs. So that's kind of my cliff notes. There's some interpretation in there that's not, so don't tweet at me. I'm not quoting them. But then Cora says today, and I listened to the comments twice on the baseball show on 98.5. Basically, he said, and he cited to a specific win around the same time last year, and he said, we decided not to add, and Duran goes down, and Cassis goes down, and there were no reinforcements to keep us playing good baseball. And he said, you know, it was very obvious to me that it was a challenge to ownership and front office to support the team. Now, one thing you're going to get, I think, is the clubhouse, which is already clearly bought into Cora. They have to be pumping their chest over their dugout leadership going to bat against John Henry and the puppets. And so that's what it was. It was Monday night, Breslow, Cora's obviously probably didn't hear the comments in his before his post game on Monday night. He hears them Monday morning. He directly responds. And you would not get that from a manager who had 2, 3, whatever years left on his deal. You just wouldn't get it. And Terry, I think you'll agree with me once you hear it. That is a man empowered by the fact that he knows he's not going to be here. He doesn't want to be here, but he wants to give this chance a team to win.
Well, I think the better we do, the bigger of a deal he's going to get. So Breslow's kind of, you know, standing in the way of that. And I think it was last week's show, we did a lot of trade deadline talk. And the aspect of it I was fixated on is what's the mindset? Not necessarily who might we trade, who might we acquire, it's what is the mindset. So this is kind of speaking to that. Like Breslow is trying to lower expectations, it sounds like. We're not gonna, you know, be aggressive. And the frustrating thing about that is you had two teams that most people didn't even have making the playoffs last year go to the World Series. And
Breslow admitted to that during his comments. He said that we were having much different discussions 2 weeks ago. So it does two things. One, it admits that they were already planning to sell. And two, it at least suggests to fan base, they're not really considering this, but it suggests to fan base that there's a chance we buy.
Yeah, and one of the things I want to caution, and I think I was very specific about this last week, but just to reiterate, this really is their last best chance to sell some good pieces for some good returns, because Pivetta's gone, Kenley's gone, Martin is gone, most likely. And you're not going to get those quality of players this winter on one-year deals to potentially flip next summer. You're just not going to have as much to sell next summer unless you're selling it from your prospect surplus. So this is their last best chance to really clean house, get some assets. And I get it, but at the same time, we should be competing. This team has earned the opportunity to be somewhat aggressive here at the deadline.
And that was part of Cora's comments, by the way.
Okay, perfect. And Jeremy, when you cited the quote from last year when Duran went down and you know, Turner was dinged up a little bit, we shouldn't be targeting a whole lot of offense here. It should be entirely pitching almost. So it's a little bit different this year.
I don't know how you're going to find anybody that's going to disagree with that. It's number one, starting pitching. I'd love it to be a lefty. And then way down the list is number two, a right-handed bat. You know, now that's going to alter because O'Neill's going to get dealt. But one thing you could do is hold on to O'Neill if you're in it. You know, I, by the way, if they make the playoffs, I'm not so upset that we're going to lose the one-year assets. Like if we keep Jansen and we won't, if we keep O'Neill and we won't, if we keep Pivetta, I think we might, then, and we make the run and we make the playoffs and we get October or playoff baseball, I'm not as upset as I was the year we kept Xander and some other guys to just flail out and lose the asset for nothing. And also, we're not going to be losing a type of player that's going to get 11 years and $300 million. So the asset's much different.
Yeah. And to me, it all comes down to Pivetta. You can't compete if you trade Pivetta. Like, so if he goes, that's it. It doesn't matter what we do. You may as well just sell. So it all centers around that piece. Could you trade Jansen and still be competitive? Theoretically, yes. We're going to get into another player here on the top five, and we'll discuss that aspect of it. But there's a couple of low-key moves that you can do, and whether it's acquiring a piece for the big club or, you know, a near major league ready piece for the next several years. But it's going to be a fascinating month. And, you know, we're either going to get what we're hoping for or it's going to be chaos, and both make for good podcasts.
Exactly. Yeah. And as you said, if they keep winning, it's just going to get more and more interesting as to, you know, that dynamic between the team and Cora and the general manager and their spreadsheets and their plan. So hopefully they keep winning and they make it difficult on them. So we'll see how that goes. But we will get into these two games, and we have a couple of observations, a couple of guys that we want to really highlight in those two games. So, Terry, you are in the leadoff spot. Who is coming in at number five?
Number five is going to be our closer, who I was just sort of referencing. That's obviously Kenley Jansen. Continues to be a great closer. I think he's going to be 36, 37 at some point this year. Isn't this close to prime Kenley almost? I mean, he goes out there. It's almost an automatic save. He's commanding everything. He hasn't gotten into one of those situations where a runner gets on and now he's got to shorten up his delivery. I mean, he's just been extremely dominant out there from start to finish. And if you look at his ERA, it's 2.30 right now. If this trend continues and you're close to the deadline, it could be like 1.70. So, like I said, I'm hoping we're buyers, but man, I think the price tag for him is going up every start. Or I should say every appearance out of the bullpen. So can't complain.
So the thing that I love is the low leverage save. So the save on Monday was an inning, one hit, has a strikeout. He's out on 10 pitches. It's almost like anticlimactic, right? Because I'm scarred by the Kimbrel years where every save was, you know, second, third, one out. And to his credit, he got a lot of saves and he got out of those situations and it almost sharpened him to put him. And a lot of it was self-inflicted. It was always so stressful when your closer's making it not stressful. I mean, it's a next level in terms of shutting the door, moving on to the next game. He only throws 10 pitches, so he likely was going to be available on Tuesday if they had a save situation. Like, all those things matter. A 24-pitch save eliminates you from being able to pitch for the next day. A 30-pitch save probably eliminates you for the next 2 days. So what he's doing is he's being so effective and economical that he's making himself available on a night in and night out basis. That's elite. That's taking it to another level. It's not just the save statistic. It's he would have had a save on Tuesday if they could have got back in the game and gotten the lead.
Yeah, it's the efficiency has been really awesome to see from him, because early in the year, he was the exact opposite. He was letting too many guys on base, throwing too many pitches, wasn't locating very well, and he's completely flipped that in these last couple of outings. So that's been really good, and I do like that he goes into a tied game Monday night, and he's okay with it. Just, yeah, super efficient, gets out of it, you know, gets his team back on the field with a chance to win it, and they do. Because a lot of closers, for whatever reason, they hate the, you know, the tie game, going in there in a tie game, or going in there and having to make, you know, five outs instead of just three. Like, they're just kind of – some closers just can't handle that. And for Jansen to go in there in a tied game where your team is rallying and they're just begging you, just keep them off the board and we'll bring it home. Like, that's how it felt. And that's exactly what he did. So – to see him go in there and slam the door shut like that, keep the team alive, and then, you know, obviously they do what they do in the bottom of the ninth. That was really impressive. So, yeah, he's going to be an interesting one to watch in the next couple of weeks, because if he keeps this up, I mean, hopefully he is dealt. I think that makes the most sense. I'm just curious what kind of return you can possibly look at, and it is getting better and better with each save opportunity. So definitely can't complain.
Last seven appearances, he's got a 1.35 ERA, only given up four hits in that span, one walk. The most impressive stat of all, a 0.75 whip. So,
that goes to the point that he's so efficient, there's no stress.
Exactly.
Well, along with him, another guy who's going to be getting a lot of calls about him as the trade deadline approaches, coming in at number four on our list is Tyler O'Neill. Had another couple of hits in these two games, had a mammoth home run in game two. Unfortunately, didn't really matter. They were so far out of it, made it 9-4 at that point. But still, it was an absolute shot. O'Neill now on the season, his average is up to 262, 16 homers. Really, apart from just having to miss some time, he's been super valuable to this team. And his price is going up by the day, I think. And he's actually going to be a guy I think will be really hard for them to deal away, because he is their only source of consistent right-handed power. I know Connor Wong can hit them out too, but he tends to go in spurts and then he goes quiet for a while. O'Neill, it's every at-bat, he's dangerous. And it doesn't matter if it's lefty righty, he's, you know, he's in his zone right now. This is when he's going to start to heat up, because the weather's getting hotter, the air is getting more humid, the balls are flying out, and if he runs into a pitch that he likes, forget about it, it's gone. So he's playing really well right now, and he's protecting Devers, which is huge in this lineup, because that was one of our big concerns going into this year when we first looked at it. I said, you know, is Tyler O'Neill really going to be the guy to protect Rafael Devers on a consistent basis? And he has, because both of those guys are just teeing off right now. So another good couple of games from him. Again, just you just have to hope that he stays healthy, and we'll see. You know, we'll see if they start to get calls about him as that trade deadline approaches. So, Jeremy, what are your thoughts on Tyler O'Neill?
So this isn't necessary. I'm stepping on Terry's toes a little bit, but if you move on from Jansen, there's other viable options to close. This team needs to add a starting pitching, preferably a lefty, and a right-handed bat secondarily. If you move O'Neill, you're making worse your second highest priority at the deadline. It's not logical if you think about it that way. Like, you move O'Neill, then you may need two right-handed at-bats. You know, it doesn't make sense. There's no replacement for O'Neill in the system. So it's – now, with that said, every time he cuts a ball off in the gap, I'm looking at his knees and, like, does he come up lame, you know? But when healthy, he's been a real thump in this lineup You put him behind Devers, and you can't just move past Devers to O'Neal. You just can't. Devers has been awesome. He's been super consistent, but you have to have someone that's at least a threat, and O'Neal is certainly that and more. So, the team continuing to win, O'Neal continuing to hit, it's all going to just play out like a dramatic Netflix original or something here as we move in and get closer to July 30th.
Terry.
So Jeremy makes an extremely viable point. If you trade him, well, now that's, one more right-handed bat you need. But unlike Jansen, I don't trust O'Neal as much as I do Jansen to be consistent and solid all the way through. With O'Neal, you have the injuries, as Jason pointed out. He did go through a pretty ugly stretch that was at least a few weeks long where he wasn't hitting. He had several 3 or 4 strikeout games. If there was a way to look it up, 4 strikeouts, that's a golden sombrero. And I guarantee you he would be leading Major League Baseball in that stat. If we can look it up, he's done it at least 4 times this year, which is a lot. And if you're going to trade O'Neal, if they've got their mind up that he's gone, no matter what they do, even if the goal is to somehow be aggressive, they really ought to trade him now, like this week. While he's riding a high, while he's looking super robust, while all the stat lines look pretty good, I would do it now. And the one team that needs him the most, and I've said it over and over again, is the Atlanta Braves. They don't have a strong right-handed outfield bat at the moment, other than Osuna, if they're even using him in the outfield. But that's what I would do with O'Neal. I don't know. The only thing I could say, and perhaps this isn't ideal, is you could give Ref Snyder a few more at-bats and probably be okay. If he was an everyday at-bat, I think you'd see his numbers come down, though, at the same time. But I don't know. I don't trust him to stay healthy, and I don't trust him to be consistent. Those are my problems.
I have a trivia question for you guys if you're interested.
Okay. Yeah, I love trivia.
Without looking it up, who leads Major League Baseball in strikeouts as a hitter so far through the 2024 season?
Man, so probably a guy like either – I'm going to say it's Giancarlo Stanton.
Who also just went on the IL, by the way. Go ahead, Terry. What's your guess?
I don't think I'm going to be –
I'll tell you this. Jason's wrong.
I don't think I'm going to be right, but I bet you my guy's in the top 3 or 4. Kyle Schwarber.
That's a much better guess, actually. Schwarber's 3 with 102. The leader in Major League Baseball is Elly De La Cruz, who with 297 at-bats has struck out 105 times.
That's a lot.
O'Neal is not in the top 25.
That's actually surprising that he's not in the top 25, but I do also feel like he's cut down.
More than a third of the time, Elly De La Cruz.
Well, hang on. Just one thing about O'Neal. Let's see if I can even pull it up here. Where is he? There he is. So he's played 56 games. Compare that to 78 for Rafaela, 80 for Duran. So let's say if he had started 74, I'm not saying he would be top 10 necessarily, but I think he would be certainly higher than where he is now.
Yeah.
That's a shame with the game-breaking speed and athleticism like Elly De La Cruz that he doesn't even get a chance to run a third of the time.
Well, it's all about plate discipline, and I don't know if the Reds can rein that in for him, but he definitely hit at least one bomb against us, didn't he?
Yeah,
legit power.
Absolutely, yeah. And he's young. It's something that they can teach out of him, hopefully. So with that, we'll move to our own slugger in our lineup. So Jeremy, who comes in at number 3 on our list?
Somebody we actually haven't talked about because he's been so steady. We don't want to bring him up every single time, but I think it was my idea to put him in there, or I'm just taking credit either way. Rafael Devers is 5-for-8 in the series. He's 3-for-4 with a home run, and then he's 2-for-4 with a home run and a double. On the season, Raffy's hitting .285 with 16 home runs, 42 RBIs, and 47 runs scored. I just can't say enough about his consistency in a lineup that at times has not protected him. I remember the barrel man, Westbrook, I think it was his second major league game, was batting 5th behind Rafi Devers, and Terry lost his mind over it. Rightfully so, by the way. Rightfully so. But you know, despite all of it, he hits. And he's been a rock for this lineup. He's had a little bit of the injury situation this year with the knee and running into O'Neill, and he's fought to get back quickly. And I don't know that Rafael Devers is a leader vocally, but he has to be a leader by example at this point. He has to be, you know, I don't know the stats. This is just the eyeball test. I feel like he's been better at third defensively. So, I mean, I could go on and on. I can't say enough good things about the player. And also, he's a guy you root for and a guy that's fun to watch because he's constantly smiling. You know, like you can tell he loves the game of baseball. And so, you know, we're married to him for 10 years. You know, at least for the next 4 to 6, I'm very happy about that. So, you know, Rafi Devers coming at number 3 on our observations this week.
Terry.
I've pointed this out a bunch of times as well, but what I love about Devers is the contract he signed did not change him. It hasn't affected him. It hasn't added pressure. It hasn't made him go to the buffet tables. He's a professional. He's a professional ball player. And this team has been a circus the last few years with all the frustration. And I just feel like, I mean, it doesn't matter what's going on around him or what the circumstances of the team are or how the team is trending. He shows up and he does his job. He's one of my favorite players. I say Duran is, and perhaps Duran is, but man, Devers, you can't necessarily call him a generational talent so far, but man, what a great ball player.
Terry, on that point, he's also one of the few people on the actual roster. Maybe he's the only one. Maybe he's the only one with the clout and the standing to do it. But on two occasions, he's come out and spoken against ownership. Last year, after they didn't make a move, and by the way, he never speaks to the media. And number two, sitting on the picnic table in Fort Myers before this season, he said something again. You know, I think that should get some run. That should get noticed. I mean, we need that. We need the leader. Cora did it today. We need the leaders on the field and in the dugout to press back against Henry, who's just a pathetic loser, because I can't say other words.
This is a tough thing to say, and I may as well be the guy to say it. We need, in the worst way, especially the way the team's trending right now, we need an English-speaking Devers. And he does speak English. He's just not comfortable with it. And we saw with the Mets, not even a month ago, what can go wrong with that reliever who misspoke, words got taken out of context. He got DFA'd. He probably would have been DFA'd anyway. But you look at Big Poppy. When he speaks, everybody shuts the hell up and they listen to what he has to say. And if he's going to criticize ownership, and I don't think he's really gone scorched earth on ownership since he's retired, but if he ever did, it would be extremely impactful. And, you know, if Devers was more comfortable with English, perhaps, you know, perhaps some pointed comments would go a long way. And I think we will at some point. You'll see Devers giving interviews in English. But
on the other side of that, when a guy that rarely speaks does, and he's the caliber player that Devers is, it carries that much more weight. And so, I'm not saying anything about your take, but for me, language is irrelevant. The fact that he doesn't speak and then does, and it's about this topic, I'll tell you this, I bet you it pisses John Henry off to the level that will make him go back into 98.5 again. That his highest contracted player that he's paying $300 million has the audacity to go and say something like that when he otherwise doesn't speak.
That's a good point. Oh, go ahead, Jason.
No, sorry. It is. I mean, that's true. It's like, because I think the contrast between Devers and Poppy is that Poppy was an intense player. I mean, he had his fun moments for sure, but for the most part, he was intense, had the, that kind of snarl in him, like his whole career. Devers, like Jeremy pointed out, he's just like, he's always smiling. He's got the big wad of whatever in his mouth, and he's like making all these facial expressions at the plate. That pitch that Gausman threw him that was right down the middle, and he just threw his head back and was like, oh man, because he knew he could have crushed it. Like, that's more who Devers is. When that goofy, fun loving, guy speaks out against ownership, it carries a ton of weight. Because I don't think John Henry expected a guy like Devers to take shots at him. Because it's like, oh, Devers just, yeah, he's happy. He's happy to be playing baseball, like Jeremy said, and that's true. But Devers also sees the big picture. He's like, yeah, no, things need to change here. So, when he makes comments like that, it does. It carries a lot of weight because he's not always barking. Like Ortiz, for a while, he almost talked too much, especially when the team was bad. And, if he wasn't happy with his contract, he brought it up all the time. Threatened to sign with the Yankees a couple of times to force ownership's hands. So he kind of went through that in his career. Devers, he's not that guy. So when he does speak, I think it carries a lot more weight.
So just last thing, I don't want to be too dominant on one topic. The thing with Ortiz is, with all the great players that have played for the Boston Red Sox, and you can put Ted Williams, Babe Ruth, Yastrzemski and Manny and all these greats. There's the most important Boston Red Sox, and that is David Ortiz. He accounts for like 8 of our top 10 moments. He was maybe the most clutch hitter in Major League Baseball of the last 30 years. His hits led to championships. I don't care how Devers isn't going to be put in that many spots to even have a chance to become that type of historic, just off the charts legacy that Ortiz built for himself. He was the person that responded to the tragedy, to the bombing, and his comments live in infamy. His legacy just continues to grow. And it's already so important. It's just different. There's not going to be another David Ortiz, maybe for any other franchise either. No one's going to accomplish what he did with regards to late and clutch moments that win championships. His clout is beyond what anyone else can even consider. But for this team, in the state we're in, that we at least have one guy besides the manager on an expiring contract willing to say some things, it means a lot. It should. And I think the players respond to it because I truly believe he leads by example.
So I'm kind of obsessed with the Devers Ortiz comparison type thing. I mean, they both have the clutch gene. I know. And you're probably going to be right. He's not going to have as many opportunities as Ortiz did in those big October moments. And the reason why I'm kind of agreeing is because ownership isn't the same, as we've said ad nauseum. They just don't have the passion to just go for it like they did during literally the entire Ortiz era. But if I happen to be wrong, Devers is 27 years old this year. Big Papi was 28 years old in 2004. And so in his 28 season, and actually he had a pretty big 2003. So that was his breakout year. So you can say Endeavors is already broken out, in my opinion, but so you can say they're both at the same age. And if this window, which should be fairly soon where we're competitive, you know, and if John Henry was as passionate, Devers probably would have the opportunities that Ortiz had. So, you know, but based on the trend, it's not as likely, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I think he's still poised to have an amazing career.
Yeah, first ballot into Cooperstown. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's closing in on 1,000 hits, you know, as you said, in his age 27 season. The home run numbers will be there, so... For sure. Will he be as impactful as Ortiz? Time remains to be seen, but probably not, like you said. But yeah, he leads by example with the bat. You brought up his defense. It's weird. His defensive metrics are odd because he's like a -6 defensive run saved, and his range on baseballs of on is like way down, but he's only made 5 errors. And when you watch him, for the most part, he makes the routine play. You know, he turns double plays just fine. Makes the throw to first just fine. The only thing that's happening is that the hot shots to the corner are getting by him a little bit more than they used to. So I don't know if it's just he's not timing it up right, or I don't know what it is, but that's really it. I don't have really a big complaint about him defensively. I think he's been fine. The metrics look worse, but I think he's been solid. So really can't complain there.
Wasn't one of the errors this series with that bunt? I was trying to look it up right now. He bobbled a bunt. It would have been a hard play either way. So maybe it wasn't even an error.
Wasn't listed as having one.
No,
yeah, so.
I got it up now. He did not make an error. Abreu did. He airmailed that ball right into the seats. That's so bad. He's just like amazing or like terrible. It's like no in between.
Yeah.
He'll rein it in. I'm not worried about it. But man, it's like, geez, man.
Yeah.
Take it easy.
We get you have a rocket arm, but you got to aim that rocket too. Yeah, just let it fly like that. Some poor lady in the stands is going to get nailed.
You got to fix the computer in the rocket so that it's you know, it's precise.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of being precise, or maybe not precise in this case, Terry, who comes in at number 2 on our observation list?
Oh man. That's going to be the guy we thought would be our ace, Brian Bayo. Just can't figure it out. He really can't. And there were some errors, one of which we were just talking about, and then Devers booted the bunt, which, again, would have been a hard play either way. And that kind of set off a kind of a domino effect, and Bayo just kind of lost, you know, a feel for everything. He gave up, 7 earned, walked 3, which is a little concerning, and looked terrible. And no one really wants to say this, but if he was a Dodger, a Yankee, an Astro, a Brave, even a Blue Jay, he would be optioned. He would be optioned to go down to AAA, get his mind cleared, work on a few things, and then after 3 or 4 starts down there, probably get called back up and try it again. But because our rotation, in my opinion, is very overrated outside of Houck, because we're in the spot that we're in, we're keeping him on the roster, and it hasn't been productive. He looks worse and worse every time out, and we just swept this Blue Jays team not even a week ago, and not a lot of offense there outside of Bichette and Guerrero, and dude just got torched.
Jeremy.
So I was looking up because I'm forced to because Jason called on me and I was trying to figure it out. Does his new contract affect his ability to be optioned?
I don't believe so. Let me check FanGraphs.
Yeah, I was just I ran out of time there. So I don't do this very often, take the step I'm about to take, but Brian Baio stinks. he's blows. And it's been so consistent that he's, you know, the idea, like Pedro was this and Curt Schilling was this, a stopper, right? Good teams avoid prolonged losing streaks by having a stopper that comes in and gets you the win and resets momentum. All good teams have it, in my opinion. He's the opposite. So what's the opposite of a stopper? Well, he's stopping winning streaks, but I mean, this is just, he's been pathetic. He doesn't give you a chance to win. A guy that started the season, started the opener, gets the contract. I mean, it's, and he's healthy. There's been no commentary about an injury. Now we might see that. We might see a mysterious oblique because I don't think they're going to send him down. And the option and the only other thing you can really do is, you know, maybe skip a start, but that puts stress on the rest of the staff and we're thin. So, you know, maybe you fake an injury so you get another arm up. Maybe Criswell gets another start or two. But I mean, look, for example, Criswell gives you a better chance to win. I mean, he just doesn't give you a chance to win. He stinks.
So super quick before Jason gives his take. He does have two options left. So this year, next year, he is able to be optioned. Just for the heck of it, because we're not going to talk about him, and he did have a decent series. Masataki Yoshida has three options. Just saying.
Do it.
I mean, yeah, he had a couple more hits.
But 3 for 7, by the way, and I like the ball down the line that he absolutely smoked and got to second base for the double. So I'm not saying that's a precursor of like this 320 run over the next 6 weeks, but at least it's light.
Yeah. In terms of Baio, I saw this commentary on Twitter like after his start, people saying, you know, it's not his stuff. His stuff is good. He just needs to get his head right. I'm not sure his stuff is that good. His best pitch is his changeup, and that's when he's able to bury it and able to get it low in the zone. If he hangs that thing, it's crushed. Hitters have 5 home runs off of his changeup this year. Now, they're only hitting 169 off of it, so that kind of tells you the disparity. If he's able to bury it, he can get people to chase. If he leaves it hanging, which he has this year, it's crushed. His sinker ball is not that good. Hitters are hitting 341 off his sinker. So that's not working for him. They've actually taken away a few pitches from him. Like, I was looking at his fan graphs, and the last 2 years, he had 5 pitches that he was mixing in. This year, he's only throwing 3. He's throwing the sinker, the changeup, and the slider. And they're hitting the slider, and they're hitting the sinker. And they're taking the changeup deep when he leaves it hanging. So Bailey has come in, taken 2 pitches away from his arsenal, and left him with 3 that really aren't that good. Again, the changeup can be a plus pitch if he locates it, but his location's been trashed this year. So I don't know if it's that he's not getting on with the program the way that like Houck and Crawford and Pivetta are, or if it's just that Bailey came in and said, okay, well, you've got 5 pitches, but 2 of them are trash. So let's throw out the 4-seamer. Let's throw out the cutter. You're going to be a sinker ball changeup pitcher, and that's it. And I wonder if that's just it's not working. So I don't know that his stuff is all that good. And then you top that with his mentality and the fact that anytime one little thing goes wrong, he pees down his leg and that's it. And he completely melts down and the game gets away from him. And we're not talking about a 19-year-old. I mean, yeah, he's a young kid, but he's 24. So, I mean, you know, at some point, like, I get it. You're still young. But you just signed this big extension and you've been working with Pedro and all this other stuff. Like, I expect the maturity to be there by this point, and it's not. And I don't know what it's going to take to get it there. I don't know if, you know, maybe they do have to just, you know, option him just to kind of, I don't know, tell him to get his head right or something. I mean, I don't think that really helps the team at this point, but they got to do something to get to him because he's a disaster every time he goes out there. And whether it's they got to work on his stuff or just fix him, you know, up top in his head, I don't know. But it's been rough to watch, and that extension early on is looking like a bad time.
The problem with the changeup is you need to have a fastball, whether it's a cutter, whether it's a sinker, a four-seamer, a two-seamer, whatever. You need to have a fastball that also makes you think about things. If your best pitch is a changeup and they can sit there and look for it, it changes the perspective for me. It changes the dangerousness of the pitch. So he throws hard, but he doesn't strike a lot of people out. And I've been curious about that since he's been in the bigs. You know, it's a very confusing situation, you know? So guys that throw 97 typically have a higher strikeout rate than him. He doesn't get a bunch of swings and misses, especially on that pitch. So I don't know. I honestly don't know. And Bailey's program seems to be more geared towards spinning the ball, and that's not Bayo's strength. So I don't know if Bayo doesn't fit within the Bailey game plan, like the rest of the starters that, you know, throw a sweeper or, you know, or have a good slider or curveball. So I think there's a difference there with his makeup.
You know, I think Andrew Bailey probably is one of the better pitching coaches, but he's not the pitching whisperer that, you know, people claimed. How many people have really taken a big step forward? Basically, Tanner Houck, maybe Cutter Crawford. Crawford's looked kind of mortal lately. It would have been interesting to see how his start went tonight. He did look good tonight in just an inning. Like it, Bichette, Guerrero, like they, none of them had a feel for what was coming. Like it was, you know, it just seemed like Crawford was a step ahead of them. But outside of that, who has he really helped? I mean, maybe you can give him credit for Slayton, I guess. I think Martin started on the Bailey program, but then went back to what he was doing previously and has since put together a pretty good season. I don't think Kenley's any different than what he's ever been. So, I mean, how many people has Bailey really helped?
And, you know, it's a fair point because Bayo is one of your young chips that you were hoping, you know, because he was good before Bailey got here, but everyone sort of said, needs that one extra step. You know, he really needs to show he's a two or even a one. And Bailey came in and now he's gone completely backwards and he looks like he doesn't belong in the rotation. So it's a fair point that, like, yes, you can point to Houck, you can point to Crawford, you know, at least for the first couple of months. But yeah, Bayo's just a guy that he hasn't really helped him at all. And I don't know if it's because they're still trying to work with him, still trying to tweak his, you know, his arsenal or whatever, but it hasn't worked so far. Not at all.
And Bayo was pretty good under Dave Bush. One of the few guys that pitched pretty well with him. And he faded down the stretch last year. So that's why his stats don't look super impressive. But for a while last season, he was one of our best pitchers. So I guess if anything can come out of this, I mean, they can't ignore it now. They can't give him the benefit of the doubt. They need to take a good, hard look at what he's throwing, how he's throwing it, and how he can better execute it. They need to completely reimagine what's going to happen with him going forward.
Yep, and I think there's another guy who, you know, we were expecting different things from, and it hasn't really quite panned out that way. And he's going to be number one on our observation list. So, Jeremy, who do we got coming in at number one?
Josh Winkowski. So, Bayo absolutely, you know, good first inning, and then it's just a disaster. And this could have been a game that you know you're going to lose and you got to run six or seven arms out there and just blow the thing up. And what does he do? He throws six innings, six hits, two runs, both earned, over 91 pitches, basically a better than a quality start. And it's such an underrated thing to do, to go into a game you essentially know you're going to lose and save the rest of the staff. So big, big, big props from my perspective to Winkowski. It's the sort of outing that's selfless and goes to show you that I think he was brought on this team for a bigger role. And I brought up his minor league stats while he was down. So he was 3-2 with a 2.87 ERA. He started six games. He pitched in one out of the bullpen, 31 innings. His whip was 1.24, so that's a little above where you want people to be. But he didn't pout. He didn't complain. He went out and said, I'm going to pitch well enough to get back up to the big club. And then he does. And he has a selfless outing like this. It makes it me want to root for the guy. You know, and I envision him getting some starts here with Criswell down and really a spot available. So all the credit in the world to Winkowski's Tuesday outing.
Terry.
He really has been a good soldier all along. I mean, when we got him in the Benintendi trade, he had been a starter in the minors, and we called him up. It was 2 years ago he was first called up. And then last year he kind of emerged as a multi-inning relief type guy. And that probably wasn't what he wanted, but he went along with it and he thrived. And then this winter they told Winkowski, Hauk, and Whitlock, and it's hilarious that Hauk was kind of in this position at the time, but they were told to be stretched out this winter because you might be starters. I mean, nothing was happening on the free agent market outside of Giolito. So what ends up happening is Winkowski is the first man out. He's the first one ruled out as a starter in spring training. And then he goes back to just focusing on his relief pitching. And I think he scuffled in a couple of relief outings, but wasn't doing too bad. And then he got sent back down to Worcester to finally get stretched out and be a starter. Now, looking forward here, if you're trying to make the case that the Red Sox are going to be competitive in the second half, it's probably going to have to involve Josh Winkowski being an effective starter. Another guy we could end up relying on here, he hasn't made his debut yet, but Richard Fitz has been pitching pretty well down in Worcester. And I don't know if he's started in the last couple of days, but I was looking at his game logs a few days ago. He's got like a 3.78 ERA, something like that. And it's only that high because of two starts. He gave up six earned in one outing in late May. And then I think two or three starts ago, he gave up four earned. But Fitz has actually been pitching pretty well. So he's another guy that could perhaps come up, make some starts, kind of surprise you, give you some quality innings. We have the offense that can win games. We've been seeing it now for the last 5 or 6 weeks. So it'll be interesting to see what Winkowski does. I think he's kind of intriguing. I don't think he really projects higher than being a 3 or 4 starter at any point going forward, but you'll take that, especially if he's durable. If he's going to give you 6 innings guaranteed every time out, you're absolutely going to take that. So we'll see. And he does have the personality for Boston. We've seen him. I don't know what the correct word would be. I don't think I think brash would be too strong of a word, but he speaks his mind and he seems very comfortable in his own skin. And I don't think he's going to be fazed by this market. I think he can pitch in this market, and he's been mostly a fastball slider type guy. I haven't really looked at his mix lately, but you know, if he's got a good third pitch, extremely viable in this rotation.
So, yeah, to answer that question, he does have like four pitches that he mixes pretty consistently, mostly the sinking fastball, and then he's got a slider. I think he's got a curveball in there as well. So he's got a pretty decent arsenal. And what's happening with Winkowski reminds me of kind of what happened at first with Cutter Crawford. Cutter Crawford was in his role for a while. You know, he was up and down. He was a swing guy, you know, late inning, you know, mop-up duty kind of guy. And then he performed well in those roles. And the Red Sox said, well, you know, if we stretch him out, we can make this guy a starter. And, you know, to this point, he's been pretty effective for you. I know he's had some up and downs, but he's been an effective back-end starter for you. So Winkowski kind of is on that trajectory. He is going to get more opportunities. They did announce that he's going to start this weekend on Sunday. So he will get another start. They're pushing Bayo back to Wednesday. So I think that's the right time to do it. You know, ride Winkowski while he's hot, give him a start, push Bayo back, give Bayo a whole week off to kind of, you know, reset or do whatever the hell he has to do. Yeah, Winkowski's been super valuable. And, you know, again, it's just that it's that role. It's a tough role to be in because you never know if you're starting or if you're going to be asked to pitch one inning or six. But he went in there, you know, after a horrible start by Bayo and pretty much, you know, didn't let the game get too far out of reach. Six innings, only gave up two runs, struck out eight. I mean, he was striking out guys left and right. And you do sort of see, you know, what Terry's alluding to with that sort of pep in his step, that attitude that he's got. Like, he's got a little bit of swagger. He kind of sometimes does like the Pavetta, like hop off the mound thing after he punches a guy out. So I kind of like to see that too, because it's a nice contrast from what you're seeing from Brian Bayo, who is, you know, looking up to the heavens for any sort of help he can get whenever he leaves the mound. So I think Winkowski's been super impressive. That, you know, the fact that you got him for, you know, in that Benintendi deal, Benintendi's like one of the worst players in baseball now, which is stunning to think about, but he's been worth it. He's been absolutely worth it. So it was a good outing for him. I'm excited to see him pitch on Sunday. I do think that, you know, if he does sort of have another good start, that maybe you start to look at Bayo and say, okay, you know, you got to sort this out, because if Winkowski's going to pitch well and he's going to give us wins at this point in the season, if you're just going to go out there and get shelled every time, maybe we have to make a move. You know, maybe we have to consider doing something there. So Sunday should be a good start for him, and you just got to, you know, string him together, keep having good appearances, and you'll probably have something there. So it was a good outing for him for sure. So with that, we will wrap this up. Again, just, you know, two games to cover here, so kind of a quick one. But Red Sox, we back in action this weekend against the Padres, so keep an eye out for our series prediction show. We'll be giving our predictions for that. And another episode of Clown Takes is coming your way, and a little bit of friendly fire this time. And but I think it's going to be worth diving into. Most of you probably know which tweet we're talking about, but stay tuned for that as well. That should be a good one. So everyone have a great weekend, and we will talk to you all later. Take care.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.